Good afternoon, I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. European green crabs have been wreaking havoc up the west coast of North America. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration calls them one of the most invasive marine species in the world, and they've been expanding their territory into southeast Alaska. A statewide task force has been formed to tackle the problem. But as KRBD's Jack Darrell reports, experts believe the best bet right now is awareness.
Ian Hudson coordinates the Metlakatla Indian Community's Green Crab Program.
And so, yeah, we're kind of on the front lines with the invasion here.
Metlakatla is the southernmost community in southeast Alaska, and residents there had been worried about green crabs for years. The tiny invasive crabs were first found in San Francisco about 40 years ago and have been marching north ever since. But in 2022, Hudson says their worst fears were realized. They found three of the crab shells on their shores. Now, 2 years later...
In the summertime, it was basically a daily affair.
Hudson says they then found more and more of them. He says September of this year, though, was especially bad.
We had a giant spike where we found nearly 1,000 in a weeks-long period.
And those aren't just shells. Those are live crabs. Hudson says in total this year, they've removed about 1,500 of the invaders from the ecosystem. Barbara Morgan is a professor with the University of Alaska Southeast. She says that big spike that Metlakatla saw, the 1,000 crabs in a week, may have something to do with it being an El Nino year. El Nino is a recurring weather pattern that makes for warmer water temperatures in this part of the Pacific. Morgan says green crabs love the warmer temperatures, but it also means that colder parts of the state may not be safe from the invasion.
Eventually, they will reach water far enough north that it's too cold for them to reproduce, and so they will not be able to, like, expand further beyond that point. But warmer water from an El Nino or, like, warming waters from climate change, that will, you know, help them spread further, reproduce more.
Other places that have been overrun by the crabs further south have seen massive declines in eelgrass. That's a crucial habitat that supports the underwater ecosystem. Tammy Davis, the invasive species coordinator for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, says these crabs are hungry. They eat clams, oysters, scallops, and can decimate native crabs, like Dungeness crabs. In Washington State and British Columbia, there have been reports of them eating salmon eggs. But Davis says it's not just those fisheries that could be affected.
We're really worried about that whole ecosystem.
They've since been found further north than Metlakatla, on Gravina Island and Revillagigedo Island near Ketchikan. And Davis says they're likely not stopping there.
Southeast is probably not the end point for green crab expansion.
Davis and the Metlakatla Indian Community are part of an ad hoc statewide task force known as the European Green Crab Subcommittee. It began forming soon after those first crabs were discovered in 2022 and loops in more than half a dozen state, federal, and research groups. Davis says they're largely fighting a war on two fronts, offering support to the places like Metlakatla, where green crabs already are, and helping educate those further north on how to spot green crabs arriving in their waters. Part of the task force's goal was to talk to their partners further south on the east and west coasts that have been dealing with the crabs for longer. And Morgan, again with the University of Alaska Southeast, says there are very few success stories.
Been a lot of effort and really no success stories.
One partial exception is in Nova Scotia. Davis says at one point, the crabs reduced eelgrass habitat around the Canadian island to roughly 5% of its normal abundance. They've since managed to get it back up to over 30% through continual trapping and restoration effort.
What I want to be sure we are not conveying is that, oh, well, there's nothing we can do about it. It just means that we have to keep working at it.
Jasmine Maurer is on the Green Crab Subcommittee and works with the Kachemak Bay National Estuarine Research Reserve in Homer. She says what happened in Nova Scotia is a success story, although there's still big questions over what exactly that means. Maurer says Alaska has the advantage of time, and that Alaskans on the front lines may need to reframe their definition of success.
What level can green crab be present in our environment and our ecosystem still continue to function? You know, that's a framework that I think is our reality.
As far as the education component of their battle plan, the task force says that the goal is to teach people how to spot green crabs. The telltale is five spines on either side of the eyes. They look like points at the top of the carapace. And then three little bumps in the middle between the eyes. And if you're not sure or you see something unusual, Davis with Fish and Game says, take a picture.
Take 40 pictures. Send me all of them.
It's also important not to just kill suspicious crabs. There are other crabs that look similar that are supposed to be here. Davis says they've had trouble with people misidentifying the invaders and killing native species, which could make the problem worse. Back in Metlakatla, Hudson, with the Indian community, says, sure, the outlook is grim, but he's hopeful for the future.
In 3 years, ideally, we have been the first organization to successfully eradicate green crab from our waters.
In the meantime, the task force just met at the annual Alaska Invasive Species Partnership workshop in Fairbanks. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
And two Alaska state troopers each pleaded not guilty to a felony assault charge during an arraignment at the Kenai Courthouse on Thursday. As KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara reports, the case stems from the violent arrest of the wrong person in Kenai earlier this year.
The courtroom was packed for the arraignment hearing. Attendees filled the gallery chairs and stood in the entryway. Sergeant Joseph Miller Jr. and Jason Woodruff appeared in court together, sitting with their lawyers at a shared table. It was their first court appearance since a Kenai grand jury escalated the charges against them from misdemeanor to felony assault last month. Attorney Clint Campion is representing Woodruff, while Matthew Widmer is representing Miller. Both entered not guilty pleas on behalf of their clients. They also opted against having the new felony indictment read into the court record.
Trooper Woodruff waives reading an advisement and enters a not guilty plea.
Your Honor, Sergeant Miller will also waive reading, advisal of rights, and enter a not guilty plea at this time.
The case is a rare example of law enforcement facing criminal charges for their conduct in the field. Miller and Woodruff are facing charges over a violent arrest of the wrong person near Kenai's Dobbins Beck Park in May. Charging documents say they intended to arrest a man with an outstanding warrant for failing to appear for a 10-day jail sentence for driving with a revoked license. Instead, they actually contacted the man's cousin, Benjamin Tika, who shares the same last name. Charging documents say a body camera worn by a Kenai police officer shows Miller and Woodruff beating, tasing, and having a trooper dog maul Tika as he was complying with trooper demands. The Alaska Department of Public Safety quickly condemned Miller and Woodruff's actions during a press conference held after the misdemeanor charges were filed. Those comments drew criticism from the labor union that represents public safety employees in Alaska. Miller and Woodruff both also pleaded not guilty to the original misdemeanor charges in September. Judge Thomas Matthews presided over Thursday's hearing telephonically from Anchorage. That's because all three Kenai Superior Court judges recused themselves in this case. All three cited local concerns about judicial corruption and ongoing interactions with Miller and Woodruff in unrelated cases as reasons for why the cases should be reassigned. Matthews outlined the maximum sentencing associated with the charge.
I need to make sure you understand that under the charges that you, in the indictment, you've been charged with assault one, which is a Class A felony. It carries a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison and a maximum fine of $250,000.
Woodruff and Miller won't have to pay bail as part of the new charges. Since the initial cases were filed, both have been released on their own recognizance. They're currently on unpaid leave, and the trooper dog has also been removed from the field. Daryl Thompson, who's representing the victim in the case, asked the judge to set bail at $5,000 apiece for Miller and Woodruff. He says Tika has undergone $41,000 worth of medical work as a result of the incident.
He was tased, he was pepper sprayed, he was kicked, he suffered a concussion, stitches in his head, broken clavicle. And these injuries are serious, and these charges are serious, and we do believe that some monetary bond should be in place, Your Honor.
Attorneys for the two troopers disagreed, arguing that existing conditions of release are adequate. Both said neither Miller nor Woodruff are a flight risk, nor do they pose a threat to Tika or the general public. Judge Matthews agreed.
I recognize that they are serious charges and that the injuries involved in these cases were serious, but nonetheless, I don't believe that either Mr. Miller or Mr. Woodruff presents a flight risk or presents a danger to the victim or to society at large in this case, so I'm going to leave bail as currently set.
There's a tentative trial scheduled for January, but Matthew says that's likely to change. The state prosecutor said additional evidence has been brought forward since the grand jury convened, and counsel for one of the troopers said the defense team still needs to review the grand jury audio. Miller and Woodruff are next scheduled to appear in court in mid-December. Reporting from the Kenai Courthouse, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
And the weather in Juneau this afternoon is partly sunny with a high near 32 degrees with east wind around 20 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear with a low around 17. Tomorrow will be sunny with a high near 19 degrees and mostly clear during the evening with a low of around 15. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO.